Hello and welcome to the Tortoise Shack Sunday special. This is something we just decided on just during the week, so we might as well have a crack at this and see if there's an appetite, because we've done a couple of conversations, myself and Martin, more or less tearing into each other, and we thought it'd be better off if we actually got broadened it out and actually spoke to people who are within the Tortoise Shack world. So I'm going to go straight in, and first of all, welcome Linda Hayden to the team. Linda, thank you so much for...
Hi.
Coming on board, and you're going to be launching a new podcast hopefully middle of next week.
Fingers crossed.
You were sending me the music to choose this morning. So, do you want to just first of all tell everybody what your new podcast is about?
So, my new pod is the Pack Woman podcast. So, it is kind of all the things that I'm interested in, so politics, activism, and comedy, because they go hand in hand, obviously. So yeah, we have like 3 episodes recorded already, so they're all ready to go. Some really great guests and some really good ones lined up as well, so I've got a couple more coming this week, so watch this space.
Yeah, I'll be adding the you'll see the links, but do follow on Twitter, and obviously check out the Tortoise Shack. You'll get the updates because you guys are the members anyway. Caroline, I'm gonna jump to you first. This week, what caught your attention, particularly in the news?
I think I'm going to go on a rant about the most recent of it. Well, 2 main things. One was the racist attack on the Chinese woman, was it yesterday? And who the 3 white kids who pushed her into the river. So that was, or the canal. That just infuriated me, because it's also, it's misogyny and racism combined together. And you just think... At what point of those kids' upbringing is the fact that you could do something like that shown to be acceptable, and the fact that you could put it on social media? Like, how is that acceptable to some people? And it just worries me of people like that when they grow up, what kind of relationships they're going to have and how they're going to treat women behind closed doors if they think that like violence against women in public is perfectly acceptable. So that's my rant for that. But I know we're going to come back to that. But the coronavirus thing of this morning, and the videos of people in the bar in Dublin all just having a great old time, pouring alcohol down all their necks and stuff. And I'm going, I am 5 months into having COVID and I'm still exhausted. I'm still fatigued and I'm off work. I have crazy itchy skin, which is apparently another side effect of COVID, which is so much fun to deal with. And it's just infuriating to think, like, Linda's on lockdown as well. And it's like, are we going to have another lockdown soon? And it's just, yeah, infuriating to think, like, we've come so far and now we might have to do it all over again just because people are being idiots and selfish.
Yeah. Martin, I'm sure you've got something to add to that.
Well, I agree with Caroline, but I think the bar is a lesser problem than kind of the structural defects that are allowing the virus to spread, such as the meat processing plants construction. I think they're far more important to try and get a grip of, and I really don't think we have. And I think we have a pattern now built in where, as you open up, different industries are going to see outbreaks, and they are going to be by working condition, not by what the industry does. We had construction first, then meat processing. Now we have mushroom farming. And you're going to go through every... Basically, if there's a migrant worker there, go have a look, because there's something amiss with the way we are treating migrant workers in this country. Something very amiss with the way we're treating migrant workers. As you know, Tony, I got a spot on the Irish Examiner podcast this week to discuss all this.
We don't plug other podcasts on this.
Well, it's an important subject, so I think, yeah. And I think we don't have a government in place. We've no accountability, no Dáil, no Dáil questions, no committees. And I think that's really the height of arrogance for where we're at the moment.
Just if I can, like, Linda, you're actually in lockdown now in Kildare, and we saw the statistics yesterday, 200 new cases. I've seen people bit both sides saying, yeah, well, we thought it could be worse, which obviously, you know, things could always be worse. But do you think that the idea that the government aren't even sitting at this stage is something that when you're sitting at home, that just gives you that kind of sense of what the hell is going on?
The whole thing has been, like, lads, I tell you this, second lockdown is way worse than your mental health than first one. way worse. Like, all week I've been raging, going between absolute rage at the government's inability to manage this and to actually take accountability. And like, we have Martin Hayden, who is our local TD, who's like, oh, it's terrible for Kildare business. Isn't it awful? Look at these And he's the junior minister looking after that sector, who has the power to actually shut these factories down, call the, you know, put the regulations in, and he hasn't. So it is exceptionally frustrating for us. We don't know, like 2 weeks, but we were told 2 weeks in March and it was 5 months. So, and we're looking at it, and we're looking at the small businesses that are really, really suffering. And I know I live in Newbridge, and around the town there's cafes and things like that who are having to move back to takeaway only, or close completely, and they're not going to make it. They're not going to make it. And some of these businesses are in the town 25 years. And there's just a real sense of, it's so infuriating, because the political will is not there. The accountability is not there. You know, if it was any other country, is there any way that they would be gone off on their holidays after a hard month of work, to, you know, to just leave us? And the other thing as well is, like, I interviewed Samantha Kenny this week, and Samantha Kenny has two school-going age children who have autism. So how's it going to work for them when they go back to school? Like, how are they going to, what kind of pods are they going to be in? Are they going to be in the pod with the other kids with special needs assistant or the resource teacher? You know, what protections are being put in place? And we have a minister for education who's never been a TD before, never mind being a minister. And there's no answers forthcoming. They're saying it's down to the schools. But Sam made a really good point. She's got a very vulnerable child in Ava. And there is, the minister is saying it's down to the individual principals. What happens if one of her boys picks up coronavirus, brings it home, and kills his sister? Is that going to be on the principal's head, or is that going to be on the minister's head? Who's making the decisions?
They've already, I mean, this is one thing that has, they've been managing the message already, you know. And when last week, the Taoiseach, who thinks he's Taoiseach, went on and said that, you know, oh, I guarantee you clusters will happen. And, you know, it's really now, it's sales. It's over-promising, or under-promising, over-delivering, and just saying it's going to be really bad. So when it's only shit instead of really, really bad, you go, well, didn't we do okay? And this sort of stuff, when it comes to kids and, you know, we just don't know. We just don't know. But I do think that the messaging has been so bad that there's been, you know, someone made the point that for 2 years, I think it was actually Aoife Moore's piece where she made the point that for 2 years, Stephen Donnelly has chased Simon Harris around every microphone he can, and now he's disappeared. You know, there's and all of the tweets that we keep reading now are about personal responsibility. And the people I feel most sorry for are our healthcare workers and the people in the front line. And because I've seen this morning, where again the private hospitals that we took into ownership, we've given back, we've stopped these, and yet we've added an extra 50,000 people to outpatient waiting lists,
800 and whatever the number is. I think where schools are concerned, parents aren't being given a choice, and I think that's really important. You should have a choice for online learning. There are plenty of kids out there who are bubbling within society rather than within school. They have their little group of pals. They're not moving outside that group of pals. They're well capable of learning online. So instead of trying to, you know, you're a general, you're facing a battle, you don't send all your troops over the top in one go. You do a little probe, you see how your defenses are. The idea of sending all kids back to school at the same time is it's like the Battle of the Somme.
It won't happen, Martin. I can already tell you there are schools that have already said it's not happening. They don't have the resources. Just to go back to Caroline's initial point, though, on the racist attack on the canal. First of all, I know the area very well. I run on it a couple of times. There's plenty of CCTV, and and the person who posted on social media, the names were available on the TikTok account. I did find it disheartening reading the article where they said the Gardaí said it'd be very hard to catch these individuals.
I think, though, that was before they'd seen the social media with the names on it. And not, don't make me defend the guards, Tony, but, you know, but yeah, that was the thing. But it's just the fact that, like, they felt comfortable enough. Like, they're not hiding behind anonymous accounts. They're putting, well, what we assume is their real name up. And like, comfortable enough to do it in the first place, comfortable enough to put it on social media, comfortable enough to not like put their real names. It's just like, racism is just such a scourge in this country, but so is misogyny, and it's so systematic, and it's across so many spectrums, and it's just worrying of how those kids are going to grow up and what horrors they'll wreak on women.
And in the same week where the Taoiseach just spoke about standing up for that most marginalized of minorities, white middle class men,
I thought this would be a 3-hour rant.
And then he puts another tweet out saying, oh, you misunderstood me.
That actually is, and I keep referring to it because I don't like when people say that's Trumpian. It's not Trump. It's Bannon. It's Steve Bannon who educated these people to do it. So what you do is you send out the dog whistle, you leave it hang there, you let the people who want to hear it, and then you clarify it. You don't withdraw it. You clarify it a couple of days later, so you give cover to people who want to say, well, that's not what he meant. And it was heard by the people who were meant to hear it, and that really is disheartening for someone who was supposed to be the deputy leader of a country for all of us, and he's made that quite clear that he's never been for all the people, he's always been for a certain cohort of people. Nonetheless, it is in the context of a global pandemic, and the country, the economy is on its knees. I mean, and in the same week, we have 9 people in Berkeley Road, down the road, put out on the street in what looks like that the Gardaí supervised an illegal eviction.
Mm-hmm.
It must be, when we talk about, again, we're back to...
Just 9 people, though, 9 migrants.
Yes, yeah. Again.
Like, so, 9 people of colour.
Yeah, specifically. So he's bitching and moaning about white people, which first of all, he isn't white himself. But, you know, the fact that, like, that was such a horrific thing, like smashing up a toilet and everything, just, you know, when they let them go back in, it just the horror of doing that on a general basis. But again, yeah, during a pandemic at the same, I think the same day, Leo's tweeting about, oh, poor white men. And it's...
But the other thing as well was, you know, in the video of that eviction, they were asking where were the legal papers? Where was the order? Where was the court order? And the Gardaí completely, not just ignored them, dismissed them. It's not my problem if you're homeless. Well, sorry, it is, because you're enabling this.
Vicky,
and
you don't
have the legals.
Do you want to come in there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not video ready. Yeah, definitely not. But like, there's a couple of different things going on there. I mean, like, you know, we're back 2 years ago to Frederick Street and the eviction that took place there. And so much work was put in after that. I mean, the Policing Authority commissioned particular reports, and I'm biased as a member of the authority. The inspectorate did huge work on it. Like, we followed that up endlessly. I mean, there is video footage from last summer, which was like 9 months on, of like Bob Collins just grilling the guards on what they were doing around, you know, public order and evictions and so on. And it's incredible footage. And we're back here again. So it's really disheartening from that point of view. But, and maybe I would say this, but if I was to point out any positive, it's that we have the authority that is like, was immediately engaging with the deputy commissioner, and within a couple of days we have a commitment to have a review undertaken. And that might feel like, you know, washing things over, but that wouldn't have happened 5 years ago. The guards wouldn't have done that, they'd have just ignored it. So that is something a little bit positive. But I mean, and I think it's important to point out that two of these issues that we're talking about here, that woman pushing the canal and this instance, you know, they're both raising questions. And I'm not saying I know the answers as yet, and I'm not drawing any conclusions, but about policing and, you know, race. And I got in a lot of trouble this week when I tweeted out, you know, that there was a report done in 2004 that the guards actually commissioned themselves, which found that An Garda Síochána Conaill was institutionally racist. And that doesn't mean it's a group of individuals that are racist and, you know, reflective of society. It means that the structures and the policies and the processes put in place are racist in design and organisation. And, you know, the tweet I used had like a particular, I think there was 3 bullet points of reasons for saying that they weren't gathering data around ethnic minorities and their encounters with the police. They still don't do that. The policing authority is still fighting to try and get that. We've been fighting to try and get that during COVID. for how are the powers being used against, you know, persons who would identify as non-white Irish, you know, and we're still battling those same problems. So like lots of issues being exposed here, and it's really frustrating that we're back at the same stuff. But I'll hold on to those little nuggets of change.
I saw the tweet and I did see the reaction to several within on Garda Síochána to it, and I thought it was quite telling, which leads me on to actually a similar reaction to some of the critiques that we've seen this week, of some of the coverage that we've seen of items in the media. And I'll go back to the controversy about Sinn Féin having basically a fella had to resign for abusing people on social media. The Irish Times had two stories on it. The Indo had three. We've seen all of these things, and how, you know, if it happens to be, tends to be, and this is my opinion. So if it happens to be something of the left, it's definitely newsworthy. If it's of the right, it's, oh, sure, look, you know, he didn't mean it. And it was brought home to me when we waited and we saw, I think it was Martina Devlin covered Leo's tweet, but didn't cover it go into what the rhetoric, what it was. And Brian Wall is on the line. Brian's actual piece on his piece, it was actually covered in a lot more detail, and he continues to do that, you know. But again, it's not, sorry Brian, but it's not a mainstream channel. And where we're struggling with now is this perception that it's okay, and I think Luke Ming Flanagan calls it the acceptable opposition and the acceptable faces of what we do. And I do think we have a big question to be asked of what the editorial lines of some of these newspapers are. Kevin Doyle was on with Ewan during the week, and he spoke about a lot of this in the past tense, and saying that these were problems historically that the newspaper had with Sinn Féin, as if they don't have them anymore. We will see where that goes in over the coming days. Go on, Martin.
I think too, Tony, we have to mention that there are civil servants who are literally recording people on social media, and particularly where it comes to migrant rights. It was discovered this week that people's tweets are being recorded and discussed. Now, I know that's been going on with
let's be honest, it's not new, it's not a surprise, and fair play, Ellen Coyne covered it really well in her article. And it's you know, again, I want to be very clear, there's great work being done and it's a really worthwhile piece, but Martin, this isn't new.
Yeah, but I also think when you're talking about, you can't have the left having a decent representation, they're not tracking the tweets of bankers who are calling for more banking deregulation. It's only kind of the left that they're targeting, and that is worrisome. Why aren't they targeting? First of all, why are they doing it? Why is there a civil servant taking down tweets? Why isn't that civil servant sitting down in a meat processing plant as the canary in a cage? Let's see how long they'd stay open if they were sitting in there. So why are they recording this stuff but not recording anything on the right? Like, there's nobody recording Leo Varadkar's tweets going, oh, well, he mentioned a very sort of alt-right trope this week, and that's something we should worry about. There's nobody doing that.
Gene Kerrigan has a piece today, and he talks about it. So let's be fair. The Sunday papers are only out a few hours. The other thing I would say, though, on that point is, and I had that run in myself, as you saw this week, whereby a piece was published, and I called it an advertorial. In the Indo by Ronan Lyons and Donal O'Donovan, and it covered off. Basically, Ronan's written a report. It's a good report in many ways, except for the data is flawed. He shows that the population in Ireland, the demographics of households, are going down for the last 20 years, and we can build smaller flats and, you know, shoebox living. But he stopped the data at 2011. And since 2011, demographics have been going up and we need larger properties. And I took that from the CSO and put it up. And the editor of the Irish Independent told me I was wrong. And Ronan Lyons said, I'll come on the podcast and explain it to you. And then they used the argument of civility because I had called it junk. So because I had been rude, my argument didn't stand up. And, you know, this kind of nonsense, I go back to Emma Kirwan's point all the time. We care more about manners than we do about corruption. So the fact that I used the word junk meant, even though I had screenshots of everything from the CSO, we don't have to read that because you referred to this as junk, Tony. And I just thought, this is where we are now. And, you know, in the eyes of many of the people, that now that report went out in one of the most read newspapers in the country, and people think, yeah, that's why we're building these shoeboxes, because we need them. There's a demand, you know. And yeah. and then we saw today that they've repurposed nearly 600 student accommodation units into co-living units. And that means then effectively they've allowed also in that then, so 1,300 a month in rent, repurposed them. They'll never come back into stock for the students that actually need them should that market start again post-COVID. And not only that, but then the Department of Housing, and I put it up online, they've a caveat there that why they don't include these at the moment in the new build statistics, they will look at it again. So you'll find out, they'll say, well, we built 600 houses, and people think they built 600 houses, and they didn't. It was just 600 shoeboxes, parking space size units, no kitchens, 42 kitchens to one, to, you know, 42 units to one kitchen in a pandemic, in a global pandemic where we're talking about people.
They're still building offices, Tony, and it looks very likely that the demand for offices is going to drop off a cliff. So, you know, why are we even on these tracks anymore? And I saw that Orla Hegarty was tweeting during the week that we need to rethink the whole situation. Yet there seems to be this bullish attitude, we'll bull through and we'll be back to where we were when we get to the other side, when there is no guarantee that's where you're going to be at all.
Anybody got any positive stuff?
Well, I think the positive focus on employment conditions for precarious workers is excellent. I think it's a long, long time coming. I used an analogy during the week that the white middle-aged men, the comfortable classes, are on the decks, while below the decks there are people tied to oars who are being whipped. And is that really the society? Is that the way we want our society to be? It's not the way I want it to be. I would prefer a more equal, where everybody has rights, where women aren't soiling themselves on production lines because they're not allowed to go to the bathroom. I would prefer that we had a different system, and I think we can.
Martin, he asked for positive.
Yeah.
That is a positive. It's a positive that we can change. It is a positive.
Yeah, no, that's true. Anybody else know?
I think the biggest positive this week was those two girls who were rescued off the lobster pots.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that was job well done, community pulling together. And I definitely was like, oh, God, you know. Yeah. So, I think that was kind of my big one this week, which is terrible that a potential tragedy wasn't. And that's the only good news we have.
Go on, Martin.
I was going to say, can I ask how Green Jersey everybody feels at the moment? Do we feel all in it together?
I actually think there's been great stuff done on that, calling out the fallacy of that. You know, Anthony O'Connor's piece in the Journal has went around the entire country with thousands of hits on it. He called out the stuff that basically COVID hasn't worked in terms of that. It's exposed those gaps. And by exposing those gaps, that is where the change will come from. And, you know, when you think about a few weeks ago, before this government was formed, Fine Gael had agreed to reform direct provision. Now in the programme for government, they want to end it within the term of it. Is that quick enough for our liking? No, but it's a huge step from just going, let's tweak it around the edges, you know, let's do that. So there are those things that are coming. Go on, Linda.
But, and a big old but in there. They're also talking about giving religious orders or associated organisations to religious orders who used to run Magdalene laundries. The women and children, or any people who have suffered from sexual violence, while either in direct provision, which let me tell you is chronic, or who have suffered sexual violence and that's part of their reason for fleeing the country that they're coming from. So, yeah, brilliant. But why are they doing that? Like, why? That does not make sense.
Well, it does, because that's the model on everything, is to put it, if you don't have hands-on responsibility, you don't have accountability. Similar to why the new buildings, the new plan that the Department of Housing are bringing forward, again, will rely on private developers, because they know, like, the state can build them for cheaper, but that means that the state would then be responsible for them. And they want to keep that off the books, and they want to keep it over there and make sure. The one thing I would say...
I think you have to go back to Mary McAuliffe, and Mary McAuliffe was excellent on this, and she said, we warehouse our problems in Ireland. We warehouse them. We warehouse the poor. We have warehoused women. Now, at the present moment in time, we're thinking, oh, we have to warehouse the elderly, those with a compromised immune system. Warehousing people isn't a solution. It's just not a solution, and it has never worked. And the idea that we're still on this road of warehousing people, we've got to think differently. We really do have to think differently.
Just to go on, just to move things on a bit, in the next few days, the numbers that we've seen in terms of COVID are starting to go up. The personal responsibility narrative is an important one. So I do think there's a responsibility that people have to, you know, they do have to accept social distancing, hand washing, all of the things that worked in the past. I don't believe, Martin, that you can separate that and say, yeah, well, but I'm going to drink in Dame Lane because they won't close a meat processing plant. You know, it has to be both. It has to be all these things. But the scary part of it is only one side of it seems to be getting the
traction.
Yeah, and that's where I'm concerned, and I worry about the work of the doctors and the have you seen the GP numbers? They are
I had to go down. I had to see my GP this week, Tony. And the first thing I said to him is, oh my God, you're after getting old. And I was dead.
And you're old, you'd know.
I'm just aged, Tony. It's different to old. I'm aged like a fine wine. But I said to my GP, I said, you're after getting old. And I didn't mean it as an insult. I mean, he was gone grayer. He looked more haggard. And they have gone through hell this last 6 months. Hell.
I saw Matthew O'Toole was sharing some of the stuff, and he put up a thing to me the other day, and I think their numbers were up something like 599% just in terms of the inquiries to the office. This is mostly people looking for tests, looking to be tested, and we're back at that situation again. Again, with schools due to open in the next few weeks, it's a scary thought. And as a father of two school-going children, I'm kind of going, well, I don't want my kids to be the going into the petri dish if this is the experiment.
But I think on that as well, there's also a massive conversation to be had about mental health and COVID and the anxiety that parents have bringing their kids back to school. But the general anxiety as a whole of living through a pandemic is a lot to take. And our mental health services, we know, aren't up to the job at the moment in Ireland. But even like supporting people who've had COVID, and like, I know I have elevated levels of anxiety especially when I see people who aren't, like, haven't got their masks up. And it just, like, the amount of times I've literally felt like screaming at people going, it's a one-way system, just fucking follow it, it's not that hard. And then I try and restrain myself. But I know a lot of people who have had COVID and they've developed PTSD afterwards, because it is such a huge thing of going, I could have died from this. And, you know, when you see those numbers climbing again of the people that are in intensive care, it's very anxiety provoking of going, you know what they're about to go through, and you wouldn't wish that on anyone. Like, you know, when you see those pictures of ventilators, you're like, they're no picnic, and the damage that they can do, they'll save your life, but you'll be left with a lot of injuries and a lot of recovery time afterwards. And it's very anxiety provoking, because you just don't want it to happen to anyone. Like, and it's just really frustrating as well to see people going, must sure only a few kids will get it. And so, well, one kid is too much, you know, we know, like, it's probably inevitable, but it's that cavalier attitude of, like Leo saying, oh, well, clusters will happen. It's not a cluster. It's fellow humans getting infected with a potentially life limiting or life altering issue or end of life issue as well. So we don't know, that's the thing. Like, we've seen healthy people who are in comas, and we've seen healthy people dying. And so it's not just this abstract cluster or, oh, the schools will be fine and we'll have bubbles and we'll have pods and all these cool buzzwords that we have now. It's like, humans are going to suffer, and humans are suffering. And I think we lose track of that sometimes, and we just, you know, like we're hiding behind words like migrant workers, you know, like in the meatpacking plants, and they're not migrant workers, they're humans. So just to kind of, I don't know, just bring it back to that. But that's my COVID anxiety. It's just projected out.
The other thing as well, Caroline, is that we're talking about, you know, people in intensive care beds and dead, you know, or asymptomatic. There's nobody talking about how long it actually takes you to recover from this. It is horrendous.
5 months in and I'm
absolutely
mild.
Absolutely horrendous. And I've seen it myself with friends of mine who've had it. Nobody is actually talking about the long-term effects that this is having on people for months at a time. Like, it's no walk in the park if you get it. Like, people are like, oh, you know, it's grand because I'll get it and I'll get better. No, you won't. It'll whack you out of it for months.
Vicky, did you want to come in there? Sorry.
Yeah, like on Caroline's point around mental health, I think that's a really, really big one. And I don't think we're a society that's set up to deal with it properly. And like, you know, for all sorts of reasons, people are having mental health difficulties at the moment. But like, take young people and look at the unemployment rates that have been sparked amongst young people during COVID. And in a society that's not structured and set up to help them deal with that, I'm not overly surprised we're seeing pictures like we did on Dame Lane last night, because that's how our society tells you to deal with bad news, right? Go out and get drunk. I'm not condoning it in any way, shape or form. But given the length of this, and given like what Linda's saying about how hard a second lockdown is on, you know, your mental health, we really need to start putting those structures in place and changing that conversation and teaching people with better coping skills and how to deal with what is going to be probably a really difficult winter. Otherwise, we're going to see that kind of behavior and then people get divisive and they blame young people and we get into the blame game. And that's not, you know, as you pointed out to me last night, Tony, that's not helpful at all to be blaming anyone. White middle class men of Ireland. But you know, it is a true thing. Like, we really have to think about, like, is there a short term stuff we can do to support people in developing coping skills for what is to come?
I think there's a huge conversation, and I actually hope to have a few people on in over the coming weeks to talk about these things. I've a couple of people lined up, and not just in Ireland, but also people who are trying to do things within China itself and how they've dealt with, because they've had several of these, you know, not just COVID, but we're talking about, you know, SARS and bird flu and some of the things that they've had to do. And hopefully we can look at that, because it was something that was pointed out to me that one of the reasons, an Asian doctor pointed out that one of the reasons the West don't like to adopt masks is because they don't like to think that maybe the people in Asia know their medicine as well as we do. You know, it was months while they were waiting, and there's a latent racism in some of the, you know, sure, that's China. That's their road. And we only have to look at the numbers in places like the US and Brazil to realize, yeah, no, it's very much, you know, it's very much sometimes who's in charge sets the tone. And, you know, we in many ways we were lucky that we had a caretaker government.
Was it Joe Haslam that said to us that the English speaking, there's something about English speaking countries, us included, where our politics is very removed from the rest of the world. It might be something to do with the limitations of English, but America, the UK and ourselves seem to have this ongoing battle about masks, don't we? And all this stuff is so petty and so trivial. Whereas you have other countries who are looking at bigger pictures and trying to get other things done, as Tony pointed out, in the East. Yet we seem to be bogged down in all of this kind of conspiracy nonsense. I don't get it.
Well, I think there's American exceptionalism, British exceptionalism, and I think the Irish version of that exceptionalism is, sure, we're not as bad as them.
yeah, that's it.
As long as we beat England, it's fine.
Yeah. Like, you know, a pat on the back because Boris Johnson is a knob. You know, it's like, let it go, lads.
The bar is low.
Yeah, that's
under the ground.
But so just to bring this part to a close, things people need to look out for over the next coming days. Obviously, we're all going to be watching the numbers and where they're going. I would be asking people to keep an eye on the demographics of it and where the hospital numbers are going, because that's where the concern is. There are colleagues, friends and members of this little family that we have here who are saying stuff to me like, going, you know, it's starting to creep up in ICUs, it's starting to creep up in those. That's where the problems will come. We don't all have to rush out and buy toilet roll, I hope. Can we agree that it's brown sauce this time or something different, something more random?
Stylish masks. That's what it needs to be. We need to get our fashion on.
But the other thing though that needs to happen is the opposition needs to be more vocal, guys. They haven't put themselves forward. Again, I keep saying, to be the alternative government, you have to start behaving like the alternative government. And I've seen some good individual stuff. I know Eoin Óibrín is everywhere again this week with taking on co-living and taking on some of the stuff that's happening. You know, it would be good to see, and Linda, I know this reflects on your party membership, but Roisin Shorthall should be almost working across party as the health spokesperson for all of those people, not just for the Sock Dems, but nearly for a representation of the left. And we need to see, I want to see that sort of stuff coming. And I think the onus actually comes on people like Martin to start calling for that, because he's angry enough online.
Well, funny you should mention it, Tony. I have spoken to Gary this week, Gary Gannon. Gary Gannon's very interested in the work situation from Sinn Féin. I have spoken to Louise O'Reilly. From Labour, I've spoken to Jed Nash. So there are a lot of in the background, people are very quietly working together, and they are. And it's really not fair to say that they're not. Alice Mary Higgins is in that mix as well. So there are a lot of people there who are doing their best, but there is no government sitting. There is no Dáil. There are no committees. So how do you get in and get stuff done? I mean, at the very least, the Public Accounts Committee should be sitting and the Bogus Self-Employment Committee should be sitting. And I don't care if it's in the middle of a field and it pissing down rain. Be accountable to the people who elected you. Be a, as Joe Haslam said, a humble government.
Right, we're going to leave it there for now. The longer version of this, including the Q&A with our members, is available on patreon.com/tortoiseshack. And the reason we have to do that is because this is costing an arm and a bloody leg to keep going. We are growing. We are delighted to be adding new podcasts. I mean, to the caliber of Vicky Conway coming on board, Linda Hayden coming on board, and another exciting project that we're working on at the moment. We just need support. It's as easy as that. Look, if you could head to patreon.com/tortoiseshack, choose a tier, throw us a few bob. It really helps. We are not really viable. We're trying our best on this, but at the moment, things are difficult. We get that. But if you get something out of this, please give something back. The content is free. That does not mean that it does not have value. Talk to you all soon. Take care. Bye-bye.